The White House's unruly neighborhood, crime, scandal, and intrigue in the history of Lafayette Square. The chapter, The Big Cheese Receives a Mammoth Gift. Starting on New Year's Day, 1802, and continuing through 1804, the spacious East Room of the White House played host to the most unusual and largest snack in the city's history. The sharp-tasting and sharp-smelling treat in question involved scientific explorations, fundamental disputes over religion, political brawls, and perhaps a war against pirates. It all started with the desire of a dissident cleric, Baptist preacher John Leland of Cheshire, Massachusetts. Leland wanted to thank President Thomas Jefferson, newly elected in autumn 1800. The Baptists of New England were the victims of religious attacks by the group that had been the official religion there since the Plymouth Bay Colony, namely the Puritans, also known as Congregationalists. In the 1800 race between challenger Jefferson and incumbent President John Adams, religion was an issue. Some in the Federalist Party of Adams and Alexander Hamilton desired an official state religion, like that of the Church of England in colonial days. Jefferson's Anti-Federalist Party, on the other hand, wanted what we would call freedom of religion, with no special treatment for or repression of any denominations. Jefferson's critics pointed to his deist skepticism toward religious miracles, and to his sympathy for the French Revolution, whose radicals strove to erase the Christian faith entirely. They viewed him as an apostle of atheism and social chaos. After his election, some devout Federalists buried their family Bibles in their gardens for fear the new administration would confiscate them. Giants from the past and pasture. Reverend Leland had lived for 16 years in Virginia, where he and Jefferson had become friends. In New England, his Cheshire County had voted overwhelmingly, unanimously, for Jefferson in the election, with the lone Federalist ballot tossed out. Leland's flock decided to express their support for the new president's tolerant stance, and in the oddest way. In summer 1801, the farmers of Cheshire, led by engineer Darius Brown, built the world's largest cheese press. Adapted from an apple cider press, it measured 6 feet across, and it sported an extra-strong hoop. It was put to work with the product of the county's farmers and milkmaids, who suckled the milk out of 900 cows. The result was the world's largest cheese, weighing in at 1,235 pounds. That winter, the Baptists sent the cheese off as a giant gift. Handlers transported it more than 400 miles, by sleigh over snowy roads to New York, then by ship to Baltimore, and finally by horse-drawn wagon to Washington City. Not long before, amateur scientists had dug up, near Newburgh, New York, the fossilized remains of a very large extinct mammal, with matted hair and curved, protruding tusks. Due to its size, the animal, an extinct species of elephant, was dubbed a mammoth. Actually a mastodon, scientifically speaking. The big dig was managed by a Philadelphia artist and naturalist, Charles Wilson Peel. As a friend of Peel, Jefferson had backed the expedition. Along with being the U.S. president, Jefferson was president of the American Philosophical Society, a kind of early Smithsonian institute. As such, he had an interest in such things. The excavation got tangled up in a scientific dispute between two continents. The world's leading naturalist, Frenchman Comte de Buffon, wrote in his widely read Theory of American Degeneracy that animals in North America, compared to Europe, were puny. Patriots like Jefferson and Peel were displeased. When the former had journeyed off as minister to France, he took with him the skins of an American moose and a big mountain lion. According to Smithsonian Magazine, he met Buffon and, to prove his point, wagged the specimens at the Euro-chauvinist. Comte Buffon's buffoonish beliefs spurred Beale to find examples, like the giant mammoth, to refute him. Indeed, after the discovery of the mammoth, not even Napoleon could claim to be a Bonaparte. The detection of the mammoth critter was big, big news. Soon after, so was the big cheese. Thus, it naturally got nicknamed the mammoth cheese. Indeed, doing things in gargantuan fashion turned into a national craze. In Washington City, for instance, a man with a giant appetite swallowed 40 eggs in 10 minutes. He billed himself as the mammoth eater. During its journey to Washington by land and sea, the mammoth cheese gave the critics of Jefferson heartburn. Federalist newspapers chided it as an example of pretension and excess. Scribes sarcastically suggested fermenting a giant batch of apple cider and baking a gigantic loaf of bread to pair with the protean protein. On New Year's Day, 1802, Baptist Teamsters drove a 6-horse wagon laden with their gift along Pennsylvania Avenue and up to the White House. Jefferson's aides, adept at political outreach and propaganda, had made up a sign: "Greatest man, greatest cheese." The president, garbed in his usual black suit, to underline Republican simplicity, greeted the arrivals with open arms at the front entrance to the president's house. The Baptist presented the mammoth cheese, which was inscribed with a Jefferson maxim: "Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God." Leyland stressed to the president that the cheese was produced by the personal labor of free-born farmers, with the voluntary and cheerful aid of their wives and daughters, without the assistance of a single slave. The preacher further noted that no cow owned by any Federalist had contributed any milk for the cheese. Thomas Jefferson, known to be charming in private but reticent in public, pulled out prepared remarks and gave a rare public talk. He lauded the Cheshire farmers for extraordinary proof of the skill with which those domestic arts, which contribute so much to our daily comfort, are practiced. The president further called the mammoth product as an ebullition of the passion of republicanism in a state where it has been under heavy persecution. It was Jefferson's practice to refuse gifts, so he gave Leyland $200 for the cheese and a chunk of it as a keepsake. A way forward to religious freedom. It's no coincidence that, on the very same day, President Jefferson crafted his famous statement about separation of church and state. This took the form of a declaration to a Baptist group in Connecticut that referenced the First Amendment of the Constitution. The letter stated, "Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that that act of the whole American people, which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting a establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." Jefferson's meaning can be misinterpreted today. He did not intend to banish religion or Christianity from American life. In fact, he invoked Providence in his public pronouncements and regularly attended church services at the Capitol building. He wanted to, and in time he and others succeeded in, quashing the establishment of an official religion in America. Given the nation's tradition of religious pluralism and violent disputes over religion today in the Middle East, South Asia, and Central Africa, most view his approach as a wise one. The mammoth cheese, however, posed a practical difficulty. Where to put and keep the thing? The East Room, then as now a place of banquets, was a natural choice. For several years after, congressmen, out-of-town visitors, or people off the street treated themselves to chunks of cheese or took them home as souvenirs. There was then no Secret Service and no White House fence, and Jefferson in his slippers and robe would sometimes greet those knocking on the front door of the place looking for snacks. Some sources, possibly apocryphal, assert the Big Cheese was employed to help fight pirates. In 1801, the Jefferson administration began to wage America's first foreign war against the Barbary pirates of the Mediterranean. However, the Treasury Secretary, Albert Gallatin, was then pushing tax cuts. The question arose, how to pay for the war? One modest solution was to sell off or give away leftovers from the mammoth cheese at political gatherings and fundraisers. Such affairs may have been held at the White House and the Capitol building. For one such event, the Navy apparently baked a mammoth loaf to go along with the oversized cheese. Large amounts of alcohol were also on hand. At its start, an official, possibly the president, wielded a penknife to cut off chunks for the guests. He then quietly departed as the event, mobbed by congressmen and commoners, descended into a session of binge drinking and eating. One giant food led to another. In 1835, President Andrew Jackson was the recipient of a Morth Mammoth cheese. Dairy farmers in Oswego, New York, created a 1,400-pound dairy product. It took 24 horses to haul it from the Empire State to Lafayette Square. Its creator, Colonel Thomas S. Meacham, presented the big block of food to Jackson at the Executive Mansion. Coincidentally, one of Jackson's biographers is a Meacham, best-selling author John Meacham. A somewhat lesser big cheese, Vice President Martin Van Buren, got a 800-pound cheese. Van Buren was apparently okay with that. He was from New York's Old Kinderhook, the place name that gave birth to the term okay. After 2 years, the more mammoth cheese was less large, but still taking up valuable space in the East Room of the White House. Thus, Old Hickory, President Jackson, invited the public on George Washington's birthday to a big cheese party. By then, the dairy product had ripened. Its fumes overcame the weaker kneed folks, namely the dandies and lackadaisical ladies, observed a writer for a Rhode Island journal. Van Buren noted that, even after most of the cheese had been eaten and its maggot-infested remnants tossed into the Potomac River, the smell of it permeated the mansion for months to come. From the White House's unruly neighborhood, crime, scandal, and intrigue in the history of Lafayette Square. Copyright 2019 by Edward P. Moser for McFarland Publishing.